don't you get to say, hey, I'm gonna fuck you softly. I'm gonna screw you gently. I'm gonna hump you sweetly. I'm gonna ball you discreetly.
Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Collerbach. With me, Stephen G. I got some dates coming up. I will be at Flappers tomorrow, Wednesday, July 9th, in the main room at 10 p.m. So check me out there. Flappers main room, July 9th. I'll be at the Ice House in Pasadena July 13th, which is a Sunday at 7:30 p.m. Stage 2, Ice House, Pasadena. Bring your boyfriend, bring your girlfriend, bring your family, bring your cousins, you know, even if there's tension there, bring them out.
And all mothers. And your girlfriends.
Clear it up.
Did you already say girlfriends? I think you already said girlfriends.
Yeah, do that.
All right.
So, wow, Stephen G has a guitar out. That's trouble. Last time he had a guitar out, we learned about Oprah and Stedman.
Stedman! Stedman, you gotta eat my box. You're gonna eat my taint. It's 2 a.m. Don't say you ain't, Stedman. You're gonna earn your breakfast. Your dick is too small. Give me the fist. You beat this box right. Mama give you cash if you play nice.
Yes, we did.
We also learned about a frog baby, which was weird.
Oh, yeah.
To God, why I'm my pop just chewed. What did I do? And then the frogman spoke. He said, I'm your father. I infect with your human bomb. I am your soul founder. It's why you are human cold.
Oh my God.
Okay, now play this. Is this a frog baby?
Oh! Is that his brain? Oh, jeez.
That's the back of his head. It's got a fucking frog baby in the back of his head.
Don't squeeze it like that!
I know, right? Sounds like Martian Underground Base, Martian.
Oh my God, don't look up frog baby, whatever you do.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying to just educate you out there. Maybe there is a frog baby. Maybe there is illegal genetic testing going on in an underground laboratory. Maybe someone, they mapped the whole human genome and they made corn a little bigger. What do you think they're doing in underground bases except make a frog baby?
I'll tell you what, if that's happening, I don't want to know about it.
This next song is called It's Much Easier to Stick My Head in the Sand. When George Bush Sr. pulled the trigger and John Kennedy's head exploded, an alien came down. He hologrammed in front of me. He showed me this evidence from a time portal. He liked to send me the messages of all the greatest secret knowledge right into my bum, and I said, alien, please, I can't handle all this truth. Especially with the tube you're putting up there, how am I gonna poop? I can't handle this anymore, alien. Quiet down, please. I'm paranoid from your proctology telekinesis. Frankly, I've just found Jesus, and I'm gonna stick my head in the sand. Boy, it's quiet down here, and wow, I can think for a minute. Can I just stop the screaming voices? I still have my nightmares from the alien probe nightmare in my bomb that was rectally inserted, cause the alien preferred to communicate that way. I said, hey, look, there's a language I speak, it is English. Let's have a chat, let's communicate, let's talk in English. And he said, it's the probe or nothing, but you know nothing about my customs. Don't you wanna learn some alien secret knowledge and shit? Don't you wanna know where we're from? I can show you, it's left one from the sun, straight on till morning. We hide secret messages and things like Peter Pan. Anyways, just rather stick my head in the sand. It's much quieter here, friendlier place.
I've just been kind of playing randomly.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry. I don't have like an actual, yeah, I'm just like switching between chords.
That's what I'm doing. Just cool. Freestyle.
I wish I could.
You know what I mean though about this? You know, what if an alien could come down to you, Stephen, and he could say, I could teach you anything you wanted to know. I can make you a doctor of everything. I can make you a doctor of women's studies. I can make you an orthopedist. I can make you a proctologist.
Yeah,
I
don't need to be
any of
those. I can
make you a surgeon in a second.
Yeah, I already have all that.
No, I can give you the diplomas in 1 second.
Yeah, well, those are just pieces of paper.
The tube is about a foot and a half long.
The tube is a foot and a half long.
That I would have to insert into your bum, and then it would give you the knowledge. No, but that's just the human plug for the knowledge, though. What is with aliens doing probes?
I don't think receiving pieces of paper, you know, I don't think that's worth a foot and a half tube up my butt.
I had Reverend Kevin Annett on our podcast, and he, you know, he sued a pope or two. You know, he sued Ratzinger, and now he's suing the new pope, Pope Francis Jorge Bergoglio. You know, and who knows if he's a really bad guy or if he's a good guy, you know, but this little song goes out to Reverend Kevin and Ned.
I sued a pope, today he had it coming. He raped some kids, that's why he had it coming. He shouldn't have raped those kids today. Oh yeah.
The pope in an orphanage is like a pig and shit. He just loves it. He loves seeing distressed youth. This place, homies, lost boys. Oh, you don't have a dad? Hey, get in this vent. You're playing kick the can? I'm gonna herd a bunch of school children. One time, Pope Francis got a lasso. He started twirling above his head. And there were some kids going down the field. And he lassoed them all up and put them in the van, apparently. I don't know. There's conflicting reports.
The legal system is so fucked up. There are some kids who get stuck in jail for taking out too many books at the online library. There are some kids who get raped and don't get any justice from popes who got sued today. He had it coming, but he won't. He probably will win, 'cause I have no money like he does, yeah. The Catholic Church. Why are they so rich? Why do they have so much fucking money? I thought it was a fucking charity, so I gave them money. Even frog babies, gotta love them frog babies, they're frog babies too. Yeah! You might not think it's quite human, but it's a frog, baby. Baby, it's my baby.
That's funny.
It's ridiculous.
They weren't sure if they could bottle it. They weren't sure if they could manufacture it. They wouldn't be sure. They couldn't theorize if the frog baby would have a soul. Would sample 614872 have a soul when it came out the test tube?
Yeah, there was an episode of the podcast, episode 52, that was with the filmmaker Brett Smith, and I showed the movie Hypothesis to Stephen G. a little while ago. It follows Dr. Stephen Jones. And it's just crazy. Whenever some guy is whistleblowing the truth somewhere, these shadowy PR people come out.
We are concerned about the increasing number of accusatory and speculative comments being made by Dr. Jones regarding the collapse of the World Trade Center. And the second involves a concern. It is concern whenever the professor brings the university into their personal concerns.
Don't answer to anything directly.
Nope.
Like, okay, he's like coming out with all this evidence, and they're like, there's concern for this school that we have concerns for the... Well, what about this exact test with all this evidence right here?
Is the scanning electron microscope, is that far-fetched? No. Is EDS far-fetched? It's used worldwide, and no, it's not far-fetched. So what is far-fetched? You know what? Tell me, is this far-fetched to make comparisons between residues from thermite and residues found in the World Trade Center? No, that's just science.
Into their personal concerns.
I have concerns for the school,
yeah,
the well-being.
Yeah, they're just putting out their own agenda.
Okay, so like, that, you can't boil down his argument to that and then just act like he didn't say the most explosive thing, series of words you could possibly say to an American.
Hey, like this was planted here.
Yeah, and now and then you just see like a little ripple in the matrix, and then you go, "What's really going on here? Is there a secret government?"
You said, "What's his name own the building?"
Yeah, this guy called Larry Silverstein owned the building.
Let's see what he's up to. Where is he at? Let's talk to this guy.
Well, he's in a lot of litigation, you know, because he got insurance for. If there's a terrorist attack.
Amazing.
9 months before 9/11, the building changed owners. And this guy's in a lot of litigation because, you know, there was a double terrorist attack. So he really should get double his insurance money. So his lawyers are really looking into how there was a double terrorist attack. So he should get twice the amount that both the buildings were believed to be worth. So that's what he's in litigation about. Great guy.
Really nice.
And he's not really talking about the third building that went down too much, but just turn your stomach. That's like, oh, all this 3,000 death. But I get double my money, right? Because there was the two planes. I put on the roulette wheel, two planes hit my building, so that's double. I have a ticket.
Help me, please!
I have a betting slip
my
for that.
My life is shit!
Excuse me, yeah, he's coughing a lot of asbestos out of his lung.
It's okay.
My lotto ticket here on the wheel of death says double, so did anyone?
Someone help me.
But I want twice the money for this. Two plates.
Silverstein, a commercial real estate tycoon with international political connections, acquired a 99-year lease on the World Trade Center complex in the spring of 2001. Throughout the summer, he reworked the insurance policies on his new property, making sure that it was covered for acts of terrorism. Explicit in the lease agreement, was Silverstein's right to rebuild the complex if it were destroyed. After 9/11, Mr. Silverstein fought his insurers in court to obtain double his policy limits for the destruction of his property, maintaining that the double hijacking constituted two disasters caused by terrorists, not just one. He won and was awarded over $7 billion, a magnificent return on his original $15 million investment.
As a result, appeals were taken, and the decisions were finally rendered by the appeals court, and it is a done issue. This structure, I would say, easy to justify when you have two planes coming to two separate towers at two distinct time frames, bringing the two towers down independently. How you can call that anything but two events? And so I would simply tell you what the case got resolved based upon the forms, the specific forms, and what those specific policies held in their language as being controlling one event or two events. Those companies that have been declared to have signed on to one form, to one event policy, were paid one event, and those who signed on to two, paid two. That was it.
Yeah, you see, like, all this shit happen, and then you just do what you want to do to, like, in your own personal way, do against that. Yeah. And in the best way that you think is possible, and you create a strategy and a rationalization at some points that need to be broken. All of us have that, absolutely, where we rationalize ourselves.
But then you, like, look at, like, okay, well, what's the ideal situation? What's the utopia? Should everyone live on a fucking organic farm, eat mushrooms, and, like, have a free sex with a commune and just have free sex with all the women? Is like, and like, eat mushrooms.
Is that what
and,
you would
and
want
like have the internet and solar panels? Is that the perfect way to do
right,
it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like that.
I don't know.
No,
is that what I'm
not,
supposed to
it's
want?
Not,
and then,
it's not like you're not supposed to want it in your own way. I don't think exactly the way that you want the world to be, or else every single world would be shit. Like, everybody's, like, idea of the perfect world has terrible parts to it. Like, it's like, if your idea of, like, heaven or paradise or whatever is completely centered around you,
right,
and would be completely shitty to other people.
Yeah.
And no one person could possibly conceive of a world that, like, where he considers everybody and, like, you know, just, because everybody has a self-interest. Like, that's just the way it is. And, like, you can conceive of a world that way, and that's why everybody fights each other to try to, like, you know, it's a balancing act, really, you know? And so in the end, I just kind of go, well, things are the way they are, and I'm going to make decisions based accordingly. However, I can't let my emotions get involved too much. I mean, like, I'll let them affect me, but I mean, I'm not saying that, I'm saying, like, you know, to think of it in a level kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, not go crazy over it and, like, lose your shit because you believe in one thing so much that it, like, consumes everything and you can't live your life and, you know, to be the most effective person you can be.
It's hard, and, you know, you see credible people that say explosive things that is, like, so counter-mainstream, and then you're like, well, that's one person, like, do more people, and then sometimes with great ideas, there's only one person saying that, and then everyone else is saying the other thing.
Absolutely.
You know, and so then it's like this one, someone said it's like that 100th monkey thing. It's like when one monkey, like, finds out how you smash a coconut on a rock and then you get the coconut juice, after the 100th monkey does it, then all of a sudden the whole society is like, we're fucking slamming the thing. This is what we do. We get termites with a stick. This is what we do, you know? And, you know, when you see those first people like Stephen Jones just pop out or, you know, and they,
or
share what they have to share.
Eris, I don't know, like just
or
every single great
or fucking Reverend Kevin Annett. I mean, what he's saying is so fucking explosive to everybody else, but it's like, why isn't that more important? Why is he impoverished and being silenced, and why are there other people that are trying to discredit him? But other people say other good information, but also discredit him. So, you know, it's just like, to get any information, that's the biggest thing. There's, like, a totally information blockade.
Absolutely.
And we were talking about that guy from Reddit,
Aaron Schwartz.
These cops came out from like either side of the road or something like that and started going after him.
He describes that he was pressed down and assaulted by the police. He tells me that it's unclear that they were police that were after him. He thought that someone was trying to attack him. He does tell me they beat him up. I was just devastated. The notion of any kind of criminal prosecution of anyone in our family or anything was so foreign and incomprehensible, I didn't know what to do.
Well, they execute search warrants at Aaron's house, his apartment in Cambridge, and his office at Harvard.
2 days before the arrest, the investigation had gone beyond JSTOR and the local Cambridge police. They had been taken over by the United States Secret Service.
Yes.
What happened to him?
He was like a co-founder of Reddit. He got sued by the federal government. Not sued by the federal government, but prosecuted for 35 years for pretty much checking out too many library books online. What he was doing was storing all these academic journal articles through MIT's database, which, you know, wasn't necessarily like, I mean, in mass, you know, like they shut him off, but then he just redirected his IP and then was right back in the system. Because he's a 13, you know, like when he was 13, he fucking created like Wikipedia, his own version of it, you know. And so, like, yeah, he gets sued and like he kills himself because he can't handle the pressure of like going to jail and like facing felony charges. So, I mean, because he was very political at the time, wanted to work in the White House and, yeah, so fortunately, it was, the pressure was too much, and he let go. And I think it's very evident in the way that he started working, when he was working at Wired, that it's not the truth. It's for making a bunch of money and, like, lying to people in a lot of ways, you know? Right. Being deceptive, and that's how they make their money. But he saw through all that bullshit and, like, just shut down. And that's indicative of his behavior of when he faces, a big, massive thing against him. And I don't think he even, like, talked to HR about leaving work. He just didn't show up, and it was very, like, it was a very bad breakup between them. But I feel like that is indicative of his behavior of, like, facing, like, legal charges and, you know, like, yeah, facing jail time. 35 years, because he wouldn't take a plea deal. People, like, the government, like, tried to get his girlfriend to, like, talk about him. She talked with him, and, like, you know, they just slanted everything, and they were stone-faced to, like, her, like, emotions and everything. They just didn't care. They had one agenda, and that agenda was to, like, find out everything they possibly could in favor of the prosecution, you know?
Right.
And she many times wanted to meet with them without any clause that says that anything she says can be used against her in the court of law. So, like, there's, like, I forget what it's technically legally called, but some kind of clause. And she wanted to, like, just meet with them and talk to them and explain things. Without that, they refused to meet with her without it, because that would just...
Well, also, just, like, going after someone's girlfriend and just, like, it's just, like, so swarmy. Oh, what he did was he tried to, like, make books available online so that anyone could read them without this, like, paywall. Like, how scared are they that their fucking ancient library is going to be infiltrated? Like, shouldn't information be free?
I mean, JSTOR would lose money, I would think, like, if everybody got it. But that's not even, there wasn't even evidence for intent of doing that.
Are they sure that it's a suicide, or is anyone just trying to snuff him out?
You know, somebody, I went to the screening of this with the filmmaker, and somebody asked that question, but it's pretty clear that it was a suicide, and that's what even the filmmaker said. I mean, it's like, you could be... Like,
did he write a note in his handwriting?
No, there's no note. There's no note. He just had a conversation with his friend earlier, and, you know, then he didn't know, his friend didn't know that that was going to happen, but, like, yeah, it happened, like, where he hung himself. He, like, literally hung himself.
Or was he hung, you know?
No, when he had a conversation with his friend earlier that day, it was pretty apparent that he was distraught. And it was in, like, the timing of the... it's possible. There's anything possible, right? But I'm not going to say that it wasn't, but it was clear evidence that he did kill himself. It does seem strange.
To say to his friend, I'm going to hang myself because I can't face the jail cell.
I'm sure that's not what happened there. But, like...
But, I mean, if he had a weird phone call, then maybe someone was outside pressuring him, you know? Like, obviously, there was all this,
It's just, he was depressed. He had clinical depression before. That's why I was saying, like, his behavior is indicative of what he would do when he worked at Wired Magazine. He didn't, like, talk to anyone. He just didn't show up.
Right.
So, like, he's the kind of guy who's gonna take matters into his own hands. And then, like, in the face of mounting everything, they took away all his funds, his assets, whatever, so he just killed himself, man. Isn't that crazy? Ugh.
Aaron really knew, like, how to get information. He was like, I don't need to go to this teacher to learn how to do geometry. I can just read the geometry book. And I don't need to go to the teacher to learn their version of American history. Like, I have, like, 3 historical compilations here. Like, I could just read them. And I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the web.
Was very frustrated with school. I thought, you know, the teachers didn't know what they were talking about, and they were very domineering and controlling, and the homework was kind of a sham, and it was just like, you know, all the way to pin students together and force them to do busy work. And, you know, I started reading books about, like, the history of education and how this educational system was developed and, you know, alternatives to it and ways that people could actually learn things as opposed to just regurgitating facts their teachers told them. And that kind of led me down this path of questioning things. You know, once I questioned the school I was in, I questioned the society that built the school, I questioned the businesses that the schools were training people for, and I questioned the government that, you know, set up this whole structure.
Chosen is, with entertainment, it's like there's no training course that can certify you. There's not, like, merit-based situation where everyone's like, there's no, like, SATs for comedy, like, and then write a humorous essay about big dicks, or write, like, you know, about catching your girlfriend cheating and make it funny. Yeah. And, you know, there's not, like,
joke.
Is this offensive material?
Yeah, yeah. You know? Would you consider this offensive or not?
A, B, or C. You know?
That would be funny to do. We should do that.
Make
this is a good idea, to make an SAT of comedy.
I always thought that it would be great to make
a GR.
Or just give someone a bachelor's of comedy. What's wrong with that? That doesn't make sense?
Yeah, absolutely does not make sense. It's like, once you start making it that, then it becomes a business, you know?
I know.
So.
But isn't it already,
you know,
slimy?
Do you really need a piece of paper to tell you that you're funny?
Yeah? Yeah, I know. And then the ones that would be, like, a doctor that, like, handed in all their shit on time.
Oh, man, yeah, like, exactly.
You know, I double-space it. Like, anything that you could put your finger on that would categorize it.
The most unfunny people would have the biggest, largest...
Yeah.
They just intellectualize comedy, and they don't enjoy comedy. They just talk about it.
Or just people that RA students just do what they're told. Mm-hmm. Write all these papers.
Right.
They do what they're told.
Exactly.
Comics don't do what they don't always show up to the gigs.
No.
They're not always so.
If you're in
enough.
Class, you're doing it wrong, man.
Should be in the clubs.
Yeah.
IO, you know, there's
a lot
of egos when you step in that class.
Absolutely, yeah. Because people are like, I was in level 4, and you're like, that doesn't mean
shit. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm the level 4 comedian, you're level 2
it's
comedian.
It's
so
funny.
I do
that,
kind of like, you know, I'm like 2 more than you funny.
Yeah, exactly. You like trying to measure that.
Yeah.
2 levels funnier than you.
I want to remind you to go through the Amazon link on the Highway Diary RSS feed. You know, Amazon's getting most of the cash. I'm not going to lie to you. Doesn't cost you anything, but, you know, a little something over here. Keep this fucking podcast going. I also want to talk about July 15th. Seems like there's a lot of information coming out around the alternative news cycles around something very crazy financial is going to happen to do with silver. I think silver is going to go sky high starting between July 15th and 20th. So take a listen to this clip. This is an IMF president talking about numerology and always continually hinting at the mid-July. If you look cryptically at her occult numerology speech, this is the IMF president.
Global economy and what we should expect for 2014. Now I'm going to test you numerology skills by asking you to think about the magic seven. Okay? Most of you will know that seven is quite a number in all sorts of themes, religions, and I'm sure that you can compress numbers as well. If we think about 2014, all right, I'm just giving you 2014, you drop the zero, 14, 2 times 7. Okay, that's just by way of example, and we're going to carry on. So 2014 will be a milestone and hopefully a magic year in many respects. It will mark the 100th anniversary of the First World War back in 1914. It will mark the 70th anniversary, drop the zero, seven, of the Bretton Woods Conference that actually gave birth to the IMF. And it will be the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. It will also mark the 7th anniversary of the financial market jitters that quickly turned into the greatest global economic calamity since the Great Depression. The crisis still lingers. Yet, optimism is in the air. We've left the deep freeze behind us, and the horizon looks just a bit brighter. So my hope and my wish for 2014 is that after those 7 miserable years, weak and fragile, we have 7 strong years. Now, I don't know whether the G7 will have anything to do with it, or whether it will be the G20, I certainly hope that the IMF will have something to do with it.
So that information also comes at the same time that these, you know, Anonymous is a very powerful movement, even within the spy agencies, you know, Anonymous, anyone who's in a spy agency and has access to the internet and suddenly gets a broader perspective on the little compartment that they're operating in, you know. Finally, they're able to see the full spectrum of the pyramid, name names. You know, you have access to a lot of journalists naming names for you if you, you know, are in any kind of, oh, well, I can only look at top secret, but I can't look at super top secret material, you know, just like Scientology, just like Freemasonry. When you have this level structure to see how loyal you are, and then you only can do depraved shit together with the fucking generals in a hooded robe ceremony, then, you know, they let you in to see the higher level envelope. So these are some Anonymous guys, only going by the name V and W, also talking about this issue.
People behind the scenes, secret handshake stuff, letting everybody know the timing and which market something was going to happen in. In addition, the day or the next business day after that first code came through, an announcement came out in relation to silver, in case somebody inside wasn't paying attention, saying that they were closing down the silver fix desk or board in London in August. That was so anybody that didn't pay attention would go back and look at these insider players and understand that the code had just been coded out and start paying attention. This is a long way of saying something very, very big is about to happen. And everybody in your audience especially needs to be paying attention. It's not just about a metal or making it hit in the market or something else. Silver is a transitional metal. And to these insider players, those numbers, those elements, their timing is all driven by almost a religion, a an understanding that there is rituals that they follow that have some kind of internal ritual meaning.
2014 will be a milestone and hopefully a magic year in many respects.
Folks, we have an economy that is so fragile. We have an economy that's hanging on by a thread. And that thread is based simply on the confidence of the paper that the Federal Reserve prints, and that's the dollar. Some major events occurring within the mid-July timeframe. We can expect a possibility of a military action by the Russians in order to take back Ukraine. We can also conceive of the idea that the United States will have military assets over there. And, you know, just recently we had a squadron of F-15Cs flying over to Poland. So we can conceivably have a, you know, some military assets in place to make it look like the United States lost bad in Ukraine. In other words, to embarrass us further, okay? To make it look like the Russians have total control and total power, which in reality, financially speaking, they do. So with, you know, the City of London source saying that, hey, we can look for a military intervention, the Russians are going to take Ukraine, the United States are going to look real bad, and then you're going to start seeing a increase in the rapidity of the dollar being dumped.
But the biggest part of this magic act that's about to occur is going to occur out of sight in this hand trick that's afoot right now. Germany asked the New York Fed, hey, we want our gold back. So the Fed said, okay, fine, we'll give you back your 600 metric tons of gold, but we'll start delivering it about 30 tons a year. And we'll begin next year.
30 tons a year.
Well, next year, and you get to understand, I mean, one of my guys who's at the New York Fed is an old college buddy of mine. And one of the things he told me is, V, you know, we don't have any gold here. Well, that's why we're always scheduling quote-unquote renovations. We're always scheduling, different excuses. So when politicians do come by, we kind of open the vault for them. We never let them go in and do a site audit. We just open it up, oh, see, your gold is fine, and then they go off on their merry way. The New York Fed doesn't have gold. So that's why they stalled on Germany, saying, hey, you know what, we'll deliver it to you. They never delivered anything. They give them 5 metric tons. That's it. Now, while this is happening, you know, Germany was watching very intently this whole Ukraine situation. Why do I bring up Ukraine? Well, it's simple. The whole Ukraine situation was kind of like a spy novel. You had a smash and grab of assets. You had all sorts of covert operations happening. The first thing that was stolen out of Ukraine was 33 tons of their gold. That's the first thing to leave the country. And over $100 billion in assets and bank assets were taken as well. So the Germans were like, wait a minute. You can give back our gold. But you have, and you're saying, oh, we have logistical problems. We can't deliver it. And in the middle of the night at 2 a.m., you smashed and grabbed 33 tons of gold and flew it out of the country. The Germans are like, oh, what the heck is going on here?
That also
woke up the Austrians.
Right.
Austria and Germany is very, very similar. They share a very close historic tie banking-wise. So the Austrians started waking up. They're like, wait a minute, we got to do a side audit of our gold because our gold is where? In the Bank of England. Okay? Yeah, the Venezuelans, you know, Hugo Chavez, at least he had the brains to say, hey, maybe I should pull my gold out.
Well, let me ask you a question. Why is it stored? Why is it not stored in the country that owns it?
Well, what they do is they store it with the Bank of England, so this way they can float loans against it. They can do lines of credit against it. They do it because it's all part. As soon as you have a country, you're signed on with the IMF. You're signed on with the Bank of International Settlements if you have a central bank. So the central bank in that country doesn't really want to hold it. So what they do is they give it to the central bank of central banks, which is basically really the Bank of England. And that's where pretty much most of many of the nation of the world's gold is being held is the Bank of England. That's why London is being drained incredibly. This was also why the city of London is in crisis mode, because back in the 60s and 70s they wanted to start floating Eurobonds. And Euroclear, which was created by J.P. Morgan, which is right now buying up all the U.S. debt, they were floating Eurobonds as well in the, for the creation of this new European Union. So when they started really floating these bonds in the 70s and 80s, trying to build it up, the gold that they used, I mean, were basically Chinese gold.
Oh, perfect.
And then at the turn of the century, John, they wound up blowing the whole entire Chinese gold that they had on derivatives. So now they got to pay back the Chinese. So right now, everybody, like what W said, is focused on the gold, is focused on the hard assets, and they're not watching the other metal. They're not watching the other hand in this entire magic show. And that's basically what I want people to understand.
And I think to summarize, what they're saying is, you know, with all the debt to China, with Germany actually asked to see their gold that we have holding, we're holding Germany's gold with the Federal Reserve. But the Federal Reserve is such a fucking warmongering institution that it's basically sold all of Germany's gold, you know, in order to pay for its expansionist war efforts. You know, you can't have bases all over the world with military members in them without some kind of, you know, without selling Germany's gold that we're holding for them.
Let me hold on to that for you. Hey, I'm gonna go smash some skulls. Now I got some smashing skulls, but beautiful.
I mean, that's pretty much how we looked at it. Like a short-term gambler, chaos monkey. That is what's going on. So, then Germany goes around and sees that we just go invade the Ukraine and try to steal all their gold. The gold is the first thing that we steal from the Ukraine. So then Germany's like, hang on a minute. We said, hey, can we have our gold back? And then these thugs just show up in the Ukraine, these private mercenaries, and try to steal the Ukrainian gold. Interesting. You know, so I think it's the whole fiat currency seems to be maybe taking a nosedive, starting between July 15th to 20th, and it will correspond with the price of silver exploding. So these people, V&W, who are, you know, supposedly CIA guys, but they're good guys trying to help us, have uncovered that the only way to hang on to the value of your current dollars is in silver. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about Andrew Bashalgo. He is a guy, another crazy person I've come across recently. And he talks about how when he was a child, he was doing something called Project Pegasus, which was a black operation as part of Space Command. He time traveled with his father.
There was a teleporter based on Tesla technology that we were using to reach the state capitol grounds in Santa Fe, New Mexico, in several seconds. The teleporter consisted basically of two elliptical-shaped objects on the floor of one of the rooms there in Building 68. When the device was turned on, it broadcast a shimmering curtain of radiant energy and that Nikola Tesla had both discovered. It's an energy that is latent and pervasive in our universe, suggesting that literally the physical substrates of the time-space continuum are permeable, and that now that Tesla, even going back 100 years ago, developed a way to tap this energy, that gives humanity essentially unlimited access to the time-space continuum, the capacity not just to travel in space and understand what's going on in space when we're there, but literally the opportunity to travel in time-space and visit any part of the universe at any time. And so we would leap through this curtain of radiant energy, and a vortal tunnel would open up. It resembled the tunnel that people report in the near-death experience.
I'm trying to have him on my podcast. you know, he's got to be plugging a book and stuff. But hey, if Andrew Bashago is on my podcast, he also said he's going to run for president. And he saw in the future that he's going to get it. So, you know, I might have a time traveler president in 2 years on my podcast. Or it's I'm going to have a complete lunlun. So let's find out when I talk to him. Reverend Kevin Annette, still don't know about that. You know, I'm just going to talk to the craziest people I can with the most explosive information. Not that it's that they're right. It's that I've been desensitized. So now the only information I really go after is the most explosive possible information. And so that's my only bias, is it has to rearrange what you know to be true about everything. And then I'm like, I believe that stuff. And so that's my confirmation bias, I guess. But hey, Andrew Bashago. This is him talking about shit.
If we looked to our right or left, we could see holographic images of intervening events in the time-space continuum going on. And we would be in that tunnel for several seconds. We would then suddenly see a little point of light in the distance, and that light would close on us very quickly, and we would then be relocated in the time-space continuum where the tunnel closed. The location at which they were usually closing the tunnel and teleporting us somewhere was the state capitol grounds in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I once asked my father, Raymond Bashago, who was a special projects engineer employed by the Ralph M. Parsons Company, why we were going to Santa Fe via teleportation, if so often we would then drive to the Los Alamos National Labs in Los Alamos, New Mexico, or the Sandia National Labs adjacent to the Kirtland Air Force Base outside of Albuquerque. And he said because somebody at the labs, namely the Los Alamos labs, might see something. And so think of the Cold War context of this. We had not only developed operational time travel, namely teleportation, by 1970, but we were literally hiding it from the Soviet spies that were believed to be at the Los Alamos National Labs.
Also, I think the next episode of Dork Forest will have me on it, or a very soon one coming up, so look forward to my appearance on Jackie Cation's Dork Forest. Obviously, she was on my podcast a few episodes ago. Okay, Here Comes Godot. Go to www.herecomesgodot.com if you haven't seen that web series. It's pretty fucking funny. Theater of the Deranged 2 is coming out in Blu-ray and DVD with Troma. That'll be in September 2014. Just go to erichollerbach.com, click on the tour date section, and that's where I post when I'm doing stand-up and what guests will be on the podcast and stuff, so a full calendar of my operations there. I'll try to be a little bit... Sometimes I know 3 weeks in advance who the guests are, and sometimes I'm late with an episode, like fucking this one, but you know what? I'm doing my best to get these things out to you. It's not easy. Especially because I want to make each one a fucking 90-minute documentary with all these random clips all over YouTube. So it takes a fucking long time to put together. I'm excited. I'm putting a screenplay out this week. I'm pumping it out to this giant list of thousands of producers either today or tomorrow. And I'm currently driving to an interview to be an associate producer on some very confidential show that they won't even tell me what show it is until I fucking drive all the way over there. What's weird about interviews is, you know, you go to an interview and then they could just, you know, cut your head off because you, you know, I'm still paranoid that I had Reverend Kevin Annette on my podcast. I still am paranoid that now he was a Jesuit agent to find out who's smart enough to get this information and the Vatican's going to send a secret spy to kill me. So if you haven't, if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you don't know why I'm paranoid, check out the episode with Reverend Kevin Annette. I still think the Jesuits are after me. You know, I'm a little jumpy to begin with.
He has identified the witnesses that would have come into a real court. And some of those witnesses have been killed. So this is, he's ruining the case of the First Nations. He's not prosecuting it in a real court. That's what I have to say about Kevin Annett.
What do you have to say? What happened with your interaction with Karen Hudes?
Well, I'll just tell you, I think people go so far as to say, well, he wears black, so he's got to be a Jesuit. Well, I should remind people, my Puritan ancestors in England also wore black, and they're about the opposite of a Jesuit as you can get.
Just send me one email. Hey, come here, and let's interview you. And I'd say, okay. And then, you know, the Pope would be there, and he'd be like, take a machete out of his robe and chop my head off. You know, that could happen. That could be, I'm driving right now to my death. Or, you know, they just go, well, we want you to be on a producer on Wheel of Fortune. But we gotta keep it under wraps. This is confidential. We couldn't tell you ahead of time. I don't understand why there's so much, like, double-blind secrecy. Oh, this is an untitled Chris Kattan project. Don't tell anyone! We got him! We got Chris Kattan under contract. If anyone else knows, they're going to jack up the price on Chris Kattan, use this information against us, then there'll be a bidding war, you know, and I won't have my Chris Kattan show.
Keep it under wraps.
So, I don't know. You know, they want me to show up to produce a show, but they can't tell me until, like, I'm going to get in there, and then they'll blindfold me and hit me on the head with a mallet and be like, we couldn't show you how we got here. I can't show you where the office is. Just meet us next to a bus stop. And I won't have a mallet. I mean, I'm not working for the Pope. I mean, I'm... Whoa. Hey, now. You know? That could be going on. We're all over the place today with this podcast. Want to give you a clip show of the inside of my subconscious. That's another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guest, Stephen G. Later.